You're listening to an Aeon podcast.
Welcome to episode 4 of Digging Into Gardening, the gardening podcast that provides you with the essential information you need to quickly become the gardener you've always wanted to be. In this series, we hear from gardening guru Simon Van Roy. Simon was born into a gardening family, raised in a nursery, and spent his life learning the tricks of the trade. As an experienced gardener and nursery manager, Simon is eager to pass on his knowledge to help you create the garden of your dreams. In this episode, Simon talks about tropical gardens, the intricacies of their design, and what to plant to get maximum growth fast. Simon, I was lucky enough to inherit an already established tropical garden. So knowing nothing about how to design or plant one out, can you tell us what the tricks are?
The most important part of any garden design, be it tropical or otherwise, is to spend a little bit of time planning. Decide on the space which you're actually looking to try and plant out. Determine the areas which are either going to be hard landscape or maybe just turfed, which are still important spaces and add to the overall design. But it's important to have an idea of how large your garden bed spaces are actually going to be, where you can plant your plants out into. If you have too small of a space, you're going to discover very quickly that you're limited to the types of species and the overall effect that you can create. When it comes to a tropical design, there's a few key and important factors that probably will be considered in any basic design. The first is all to do with layering. You will find that good tropical gardens have a lot of depth to them. They contain a lot of large growing plants and a lot of small growing plants, but they're used closely together. You'll see lots of different large leaves as well as a variety of textures, but not only that, you'll see strong, bold colours, and you'll often see those used en masse. You won't see a significant variety of colour through large tropical gardens with an undermining colour, which is simply green or even just shades of green. There are a surprising number of different colours of green which you see in gardens, and sometimes those light yellows, deep dark greens are just enough of a contrast to really make an area exciting. Once you've determined the area that you wish to plant, that's the ideal time to then go and get some good advice for your area. In different areas, different plants are going to perform differently. Creating a tropical garden in a, say, temperate climate in the southern states of Australia is a very different planting palette to attempting to make a true tropical garden, say, in the actual tropics of northern Australia. Somewhere in the middle, in the subtropical to temperate zones, there are lots of species that cross over. But it'll be important to think about the seasonality of your garden. When you're planting and designing a tropical garden in the middle of summer, you'll have hundreds of plant choices to choose from. But remember that a lot of those choices are going to look very different when it comes to the cool of winter. Think about a beautiful frangipani as an example. In the height of summer, it's full of foliage, it's lush and it's thick and it's covered in abundant flowers, smelling fantastic. It's a great addition to any tropical garden space. But come to winter,
it looks like an old withered hand.
It can look a little bit different. And sometimes the structure of a deciduous tree, the shape and the form of the branches and the limbs, can be just as exciting as a plant that's full of foliage and full of flower. Mm. But you need to consider that at your design stage. If you're using that plant to screen a window from passing traffic, come winter, that's going to be very exposed and look very different. So important to consider those elements of the design as to what purpose the plants are serving and ensuring that the seasonality of your garden doesn't affect their overall result. The other most important thing is to not be completely overwhelmed by just how many choices there are out there in the market to create or plant into a tropical garden. Well-designed tropical gardens will often use repeating species and repeating design aspects. You may see one plant used consistently throughout the entire garden and then added to with significant feature plantings after that. Mm. Don't be afraid to use the same thing en masse through different areas, because sometimes the effect of one plant is very different to a massed effect. Often in tropical gardens, you'll see one plant species used to great effect, and it's a great and easy way to get a lot of depth in a garden without having to use a huge variety of plants.
Yeah, so a little bit like we've got our bromeliads, and they're clumping, aren't they? Is that the right term?
Correct, correct. So bromeliads will clump and spread.
Yeah, so we've got a really large area of those and it looks great.
Having that ability to not only get free plants for them as they multiply and move around the garden, but not only that, you can clean out the older plants, allow the new plants to come through and take the role as a real showpiece. But having them en masse is a very different effect to having just one single species in a pot or just nestled into the garden by itself. You often get a lot more impact from allowing that plant to really have its space to shine.
All right, so I've chosen my area and I'm ready to go. Is there any plant I shouldn't use? Are there any do's and don'ts as far as selection goes?
People often ask us, what are the plants that should be used in a tropical garden? And the answer to that is anything that you would like to use. There really isn't a lot of specific varieties that you should choose to avoid. Even using plants that would be not generally considered a tropical plant, but used in the correct way as part of a tropical design can add great, amazing feature. Deciduous trees are often considered part of a more temperate or cool climate garden, but they can be a great way to add, say, shade in the heat of summer, but allow a lot of winter sun to reach your tropical garden. It can actually create a beautiful microenvironment that allows you to grow lots of different plant species. So there's no real wrong answer to it. Just try to follow those basic designs. The other thing that is important is consider the overall size to which your plant choices will grow. Tropical gardens are known to be very, very quick growing, and a lot of species will have very different results depending on where in the garden you plant them and indeed where in the world you live. In this part of the world here in southeast Queensland, you'll find that fast growing gardens often include heliconias, gingers, and other quintessentially tropical plant species. It's important to understand how these plants grow and therefore how you can use them in your garden space. A lot of tropical plants will be clumping or rhizomal plants that will spread under the ground and therefore need a reasonable amount of soil and space in the ground to grow and develop their clumps. Planting that in an extremely narrow, contained, confined garden bed, say, against a boundary fence, can often lead people to believe that those plants can be invasive or a problem, simply because they've been planted out in the wrong location.
Back to the ginger thing, I just have a quick question about that, which I think will then lead into potentially into maintenance.
Sure.
Ginger scares me.
I'm not sure that anyone's ever told me that ginger is a scary thing, but okay, all right. I've been terrified, waking up screaming as a clump of ginger attacks me.
So I bought one for a friend and a lovely lady who had bought the same plant. It was beautiful, purple and pink, I think it was.
Yes.
And the lady said to me, she looked like a seasoned gardener, which I am not. And she said, oh, you're going to try and keep one alive too, are you? And so then I was like, oh, maybe this isn't the best gift. Is it like an orchid? Are they like orchids in the respect that the flower comes and goes?
The best answer in regards to gingers is to actually say to you, there are hundreds of varieties of plants that are commonly referred to as gingers. Outside of the edible choices, so true edible ginger, which even by itself is a beautiful ornamental plant, but produces the edible rhizomes from beneath the ground, which you and I buy from the shops as ginger. Mm-hmm. When you move into ornamental, true ornamental species of gingers, many of these species are deciduous, meaning that they will die down in winter. Mm. So when it comes to both planting and designing your tropical garden, know what the plant is going to do. So those deciduous varieties of gingers often have the most impressive flowers. And I think a lot of people out there believe that they've killed their ornamental ginger because it dies down in winter. Mm. And they weren't expecting it to disappear for 3 months of the year and they assume that they've done the wrong thing. Whereas in fact, they've actually done exactly the right thing. And if they leave well enough alone, they'll find that next season they have quite a few more gingers and they will all flower up beautifully. Okay. But it's important to know how your plant is going to behave in that climate. So if you're looking at a deciduous variety of ginger, say like a curcuma or a globber, those species actually need to be protected from the cooler winter months and kept beautifully dry through the winter season.
Okay.
Those species then produce the most amazing array of flowers in the warmer summer months through Christmas and into the early parts of the new year. Those species are a great way to add just a pop of colour through that warm time of the season, but be careful about how many of them you use, because you will have a dead space in that part of the garden come winter when they die down.
Yeah.
So then you have evergreen varieties of gingers, commonly known as things like alpinias, are probably the most common variety of genus of gingers, which most varieties are evergreen in this part of the world, meaning that they don't die down. So they're a great way to add stability into a garden. They come in a variety of sizes, leaf colours, beautiful variegations, including yellows and reds, as well as shades of green. And they're a great way to fill those spaces and have something that's lush and thick and full all the time. In fact, many alpinias are considered some of the most cold-tolerant gingers, as they don't die down even in our coolest of the winter times.
Then as far as maintenance goes, you know, if we're not factoring in the ginger side of things, do you find that people think that their tropical garden won't need much maintenance?
It seems incredibly common to believe that once planted out, because it's so lush and so thick, it will stay that way all the time, whereas it's often quite the opposite. Tropical gardens in a tropical to subtropical climate will be incredibly quick growing and can often spread and develop far faster than anyone's ever expecting. A good tropical garden needs to have some kind of maintenance program. Most commonly, that maintenance takes place at the end of winter, going into spring, as the weather starts to warm up, all your plant species start to come alive again, and you start to see new growth and you start to see new development. A lot of tropical plants will often flower from that new growth. So it's important that maintenance is done to, say, remove old or spent flowers, remove old or damaged foliage, dig out existing rhizomes if they're taking up too much space, say from heliconias or gingers. If they filled an area, you need to remove some of that rhizomal base to ensure that there is space for the new plant to continue to develop.
Yeah, right.
It's an ideal time to separate, it's an ideal time to divide, it's an ideal time to repropagate new plants. Often tropical gardens are some of the most rewarding because you and your neighbours within a couple of years can have beautiful tropical gardens all made from one garden because they spread and grow so quickly. It's also the most important time of the season to be starting to consider fertilisation, looking after the soil to ensure that come the heat of summer, your plants are absolutely thriving, have got all the moisture and nutritional requirements that they need fully met. So normally as you leave winter and start to go into spring, like anything that's starting to wake up, it's the perfect time to start applying fertiliser, ensure that the garden bed's properly mulched to protect and insulate all those healthy microbes and living organisms in a soil, as well as plant out any spots which you think are going to need extra planting for the growth in summer.
I've got a question about bromeliads.
Yes.
When they clump, do they grow out of the ground?
No.
Okay, so what's happened then? My garden, the roots are off the ground.
Yes.
And it almost looks like a safe haven for snakes to go. Well, it is. That's where they've been. So I've had to pull quite a few out of the backyard.
Sure.
And I've replanted the front because they were so high off the ground. Why?
So most bromeliads come from a group of plants known as epiphytes, quite literally meaning growing on air. So they don't actually require their roots to be in soil. At that point, you'll often see these varieties climbing up trees, scrambling over rocks, spreading through some of the most difficult territory to ever have plants growing. Mm. And bromeliads do it with absolute ease. It's one of the great levelers in a garden where you've got a difficult space. Often the only things that we find that will grow will be bromeliads. Mm. And that's because they have very little interest in the quality of the soil. They gain all of their nutrition and most of their nutrients from the air and from moisture and humidity that exists around the plant.
Hmm.
Bromeliads only produce, well, most varieties of bromeliad only flower once in their lifetime, after which they then reproduce and produce what are called pups, which can then either be allowed to grow out, they will in turn colour or flower up, and can then be separated from the parent plant. What it can mean is if there is no maintenance carried out on those bromeliads, they will just keep mounding up on each other and create the kind of effect that you're describing.
Yeah.
The older parent plants often don't continue to flower, and at that point it's an ideal opportunity to thin them out, remove some of the older plants, give space to the new plants to grow and develop. You'll find that they have better colour, better growth, and are overall more healthy if they're allowed to have a little bit more space. You can then choose to simply replant them a little deeper in the ground to avoid that mounding effect. But that's part of the maintenance that has to be carried out to keep your bromeliad garden looking really, really nice.
Okay, great. So essentially it's proper planning, layering, maintenance, That's absolutely pretty much
plant
the magic
choice
of it.
It'll come down to proper design, selecting the right plant for the right location, understanding how those plants will work in your climate, mm-hmm. and then choosing to use those tropical garden planting design techniques, and then having a good maintenance program to keep it looking good for years to come.
Perfect. Simon, thank you for your knowledge today.
No
As
worries.
As always, we are full of new tips and we should all go out and hit the gardens.
Absolutely. Enjoy.
This has been episode 4 of Digging Into Gardening. I hope you've found it as useful as I have. In episode 5, Simon discusses all things water, water retention, water techniques, and how much water your garden actually needs. If you've enjoyed this episode and would like more information on this or other topics, visit the blog section of manawee.com.au.